What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 7 of the Tucson Pinball Podcast. So, what is the dirtiest word in pinball? Well, if you're a collector of any sort, the dirtiest word in pinball is project. Yeah, that's right. You have a machine and you just want to play it, but you can't because there's something major wrong with it. There's a difference between a repair and a project. And a repair is literally it's just a fuse thing. You know, you see a game on Craigslist and you're like, it says not working, probably just a fuse. Well, no, if it's just a fuse, replace the fuse and sell it as working for what you potentially could get it for. Or get for it, anyways. No. When it says just a fuse, it's never just a fuse. Because if it was a fuse, like I said, you would just sit there and go, okay, let's find the broken fuse. And sometimes on some games, they hide fuses in interesting spots, so it might be a little challenging. But you know what? If you actually want to sell something and put some effort into it, and, you know, it's kind of the... Here's the situation. If you want to sell something, and let's say it's worth $100, if it has something that is repairable that is broken on it, and you're listing it for $25, then, okay, that's fine. If you are listing it for $100 and this repairable item is not fixed, and you're saying, oh, it's probably just this or that, you know, using a non-pinball-specific example, then, you know, you're going to wait a while before you sell that item. So when you list something and it's just a fuse, it's not just a fuse. Because if it was, you would have fixed it. Anyways, let's not do a little circular argument on that. Let's say you've bought this item. Let's say it's a pinball podcast. Let's talk about pinball. You bought a pinball machine. Something doesn't work. Let's make something up. The right flipper doesn't work. Well, there's a few different ways that flippers work on various eras of machines and things like that. So, you know, depending on the age of the machine, it could be set up certain ways. Like, I have several System 11s. I think it's a great system. Flippers on System 11s basically don't work for a few reasons. Either the flipper button inside the cabinet is just, like, gone, or the pads are gone, or the relay isn't activated in the head because it doesn't know that there's a new game starter or something like that. System 11 flippers are so freaking robust, it's unbelievable. And when things tend to go wrong on System 11 flippers, it is the end of stroke switch. So when you hit the button and the flipper goes up, while it's going up, it's getting the full power of the high voltage side that it's supposed to get. When it comes close to getting to the top, it hits this little tab and it opens a switch, which cuts that voltage essentially in half. And so that you can hold that button and it's not getting the whole voltage. Because if you do that, the coil's going to overheat and things are going to melt and, you know, your game then becomes a project. But when it's only getting half voltage, you can sit there and hold that thing forever because that's just the way it's all worked out. I'm not an electronics engineer or anything like that. I know Ohm's law. I can figure out various electrical things. Electrical theory is not something I understand. So I don't know why that's the case. It just is the case, and I leave it at that. But let's say you go to the next era in the Williams line, WPC. On WPC machines, there's a fuse for each one of the flippers because it's now, you know, their next evolution in board design, and that's the way they wanted to go with things. So let's use the example again. If your right flipper doesn't work on a WPC machine, you might have a blown out fuse. But guess what? If it's just a fuse, fix the freaking fuse, man. It's really not that complicated. It's hard to understand and learn these things, but you know, in this hobby, if you own a game, it will require some maintenance. So it just seems like such a daunting task at first, but just kind of work through things and go online and find like the pin repair wiki and stuff like that. And you know, help yourself out. You know, if you own this machine and you don't want to pay somebody the equivalent of what the machine is worth, you know, over the course of a couple fixes, then you're going to have to learn to do it yourself. So, anyways, pretty much everybody I know that owns machines, they, you know, you get into this, like, this collector's circle, and you just kind of chat about different things. That, oh, I had this happen, and, you know, I kind of tracked it down, but I'm still not sure. And somebody else will be like, oh, dude, I had that same thing happen on a similar game. It's not the same exact game, or, you know, it's not the same system, but it ended up being such and such on mine. You know, maybe yours has a similar way it works, and, you know, whatever. I know that's a very vague example, but, you know, there's lots of different things. Like, end-of-stroke switches, on anything that's not super modern, it'll have an end-of-stroke switch. And even some modern manufacturers are probably using those as well. So, and that's a very universal technique for not melting coils. So, you know, if you're melting a coil and it's not a new stern, then it might be your end-of-stroke switch is either, and this happened to me. I have a Diner, and the tab on the end-of-stroke switch, the tab that gets, you know, pressed so this little contact opens up at the end of, that's why it's called end-of-stroke, because that's the full stroke of the flipper. When it reaches the end of its stroke, it hits that switch. So that tab had actually snapped off, and I have no idea how many cycles that game has on it. That might be the original one. I don't know. I don't know how common that is, but it happened, and it actually took me a little while to figure out what had happened. So, hey, guess what's still here? Yep, that's the cough. So, anyways, this tab on the end-of-stroke switch had snapped off, and so the high voltage was never getting cut off, and just playing the game regularly would do this coil in. And sure enough, it melted the sleeve inside the coil to the actual coil bobbin itself, and the plunger got locked in place, essentially. You know, it was stuck because the plastic warped, and it's not that nice, smooth channel that the plunger goes through. And it was stuck in, like, the halfway up position, and that was kind of the indicator. Somebody sent me a message, I checked it out, and, yeah, it was, like, locked in place. So, yeah, you know, that's, if you own a pinball machine, it's going to have maintenance, kind of, I, you know, a little nicer than suck it up, buttercup, but suck it up, buttercup, you know, the internet is out there, and there's tons of information on there. I'm just glad it's not pre-internet, and I'm a collector, because I don't think I know enough people, well, I do know enough people, but I don't know that I would have met enough people without the internet to be able to fix my problems. So, thank you, internet. Thanks, internet. All right, so I have some projects. I used to have three. I now have two. So let's list the one that just dropped off the list. So I went to Texas Pinball Festival in March. Yes, that sounds about right. March. Yes. And we brought home, as a group, the three of us, one of the individuals that was there, Dave, he picked up a game called Special Force, and it was blowing a fuse. Everything was supposedly fully shopped out and, you know, yada yada. The trough kicker that shoots the ball into the shooter lane, or actually no, that kicker shoots it back into the line of where the ball stack sits, because it's the geometry requires a second shooter or a second coil to kick that out. So anyways, there's a yoke on there is what it's called, and because things are not, like, pivoting on one axis, they need two separate pivot points to kind of take care of some of the slop in that pivot motion. So because what you're not actually pivoting around the plunger that gets sucked into the coil, that's how these things work, which is really cool. So your item tends to not be revolving directly around a nice axis on that plunger coil, or that plunger. So you have this yoke, and it's got two pivot points on it, and that accounts for the motion and some of the angular slop stuff. Physics, yo. So Anyways, that yolk had shattered because these are like hard-packed layers of, they're like fiber layers. They almost look like circuit boards, but they're like two or three times as thick and probably not made out of the same material. These look like, I don't know, I play hockey. So I have hockey sticks that are graphite and then they're wrapped, they've got a Kevlar covering because it's more cut resistant than graphite, because you cut graphite and it just shatters when you use, you know, you hit it on anything. So the Kevlar is there to protect the graphite. And so it looks a lot like Kevlar to me, but I don't think that's what it is. I have no idea what it is. It's really freaking strong though. And it's kind of wear resistant. Like, you don't have to lubricate it. You shouldn't be lubricating anything on your pinball machines unless the manufacturer has specifically said so. Because I have found remnants of WD-40 on flipper coil plunger type stuff, and all that does is it keeps that dust on the motion parts, and that just accelerates the wear. And yeah, it's a 50-cent coil sleeve, but still, you don't lube your stuff. It's fine. So anyways. That had broken, like, either right before the show or at the show, and they had a replacement part, but it wasn't for the exact thing, so they kind of made it work, but it was blowing fuses, and they thought that's what it was. So, you know, we played it a couple times, they dropped the price a couple times, and eventually Dave's like, I think I just kind of have to buy it. So we came home with the machine, and it came to my place, because I have the space for working on a pinball machine. So I had it set up in my shop area, and I was going through it, and I was playing it, and it was blowing these fuses like crazy, and I was just like, I don't know if this is it or not. So I had their part, and the only issue was that super like strong wafer board type thing. It was too thick, so it was one generation newer, and so it was a little thick. So I sanded that down, and so that the C-clip could actually clamp down where it needed to, and all of a sudden that play, there was a little bit of a bind in that, and that was completely removed, and it was a lot more smooth. And so I was like, all right, cool, that would be really awesome if that's all it needed, and, you know, we could kind of hold this thing over until we could, you know, put together another order of parts, and then you don't have to pay shipping on two separate orders, because, you know, on a part like that, the shipping would be even more than the part, which, you know, sometimes you have to do, but you try to avoid it. So anyways, so the game was playing great, and I bought some fuses, and it was played it, and it was still blowing fuses every now and then. So I go into the menu, and I looked online, found the manual, because this is a 1985, 86, something like that, Bally Special Force. And I found out that this fuse on the playfield, it's not in the head, it's on the playfield, it's a 1-amp slow blow fuse, and it actually is responsible for several coils. And I'm like, man, 1 amp. I know an amp is actually a fairly hefty amount, but I'm sitting here thinking, you know, on Brida Pinbot, doesn't the left and right flipper each have like a 3-amp fuse? And these 6 or 9 features or whatever all are on this 1-amp fuse? Like, that just seems weird. But, you know, the manual says so, and that's the way it was designed. So, anyways, then one day I noticed something. I had the wrong type of fuse in there. It was a 1-amp, but it was a fast blow. And there's a difference, because the way the fast blows work is if you pull too much on those, they blow like that. If on a slow blow, if you pull too much, it's a much more steady path into blowing that fuse. Like, it can take an overcurrent for a little while before it actually blows. Like, it gives you a little bit of wiggle room. So I got a shipment in of fuses. It's the proper type and everything, but before that I was using the fast blows, and I actually had the playfield propped up, and I was going through the coil test mode, and all of a sudden I see this glow like a little firefly. And I'd never noticed that before, because the playfield had always been down when the fuse would blow. This time I was like in there with my multimeter, and I was checking voltages and everything like that. And so I saw that glow, but it was cycling through coils. Like, it wasn't on a single coil, and you test it over and over and over again, because there's different types of tests, in case you're not familiar. So it was cycling. I'm like, oh, what happened? What happened? And then all of a sudden, it glued again, and then half the coils stopped working, you know, because you get used to, like, it's a very rhythmic thing. It goes bop, 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 and each time it's a different coil because it's moving through the test, and it's, you know, with coils, it's a very audible thing. With lights, it's very visual. With displays, you have to look at the display, and on this one, it cycles through 0, 1, 2 in, like, every single place on there. So, anyways, I noticed that a lot of these coils stopped working at that point, and I checked, and sure enough, that fuse was gone. It's like, all right, cool, so let's narrow this down a little bit more. So I went in and replaced the fuse. I've got a few more, you know, it's carry spares. And so I went in, and I went to a single coil test, and I knew from the manual which coils were on this line. So I went through, and it's the slingshots and the pops and a lot of the trough stuff. There's like there's two coils in the trough, and then there's the kicker is on there's or the knocker. I'm sorry. When you get a free game or you match, the knocker goes off, makes the coolest sound in pinball, and because it's so satisfying when it just either hits that bare wood, which unfortunately on some games it happens, but it's just like this cracking sound, and it's so fun sounding. And most games have a metal plate. That's what you should have, but that's fun to hear. And I always liked hearing it on this game, because that the replay on this game by default is not the easiest thing in the world to get to. So, anyways, so I go back through, and I'm doing the single coil test now. And I've got a new fuse in there, and I'm seeing this firefly glow, because the playfield is propped up. And I'm like, all right, you know, left sling, and it goes, and it glows, and then it goes back down. And then I do it again, and it glows, and it goes back down. I mean, it won't let you do it like bam, 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 bam. There's a little bit of a debounce on there, so it's like bam, 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 like kind of the same speed as when it's doing the auto test and it's cycling through everything, but like as fast as you press that button, it won't let you do the test. So anyway, so I do the slingshot a couple times. I'm like, all right, I think that's fairly safe, and I do the other slingshot a couple times because I know that something is actually blowing this fuse at the same cycle pace as the default, you know, when it goes through all the different coils. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something that's stressing that fuse out to the point that it completely goes. So do the other slingshot on the right side a couple times, not an issue. Do the trough coils, which, remember, one of those two trough coils was getting the finger pointed at it originally, saying that's what's causing it, because it's like binding and it's, you know, whatever. So it's stressing that out, which actually, when you think about it, it's not. Because when you run a current through that coil, it doesn't give a crap where anything is, because it doesn't have a switch on the other side that says, okay, the task has been complete because the plunger has moved far enough. You know, it'll just send that pulse through, and then whether it does its job or not, the electricity doesn't know, and the machine doesn't know, and nothing really cares. So, you know, I tried that trough coil a couple times. Everything worked fine. Tried the other one. Everything worked fine. Gets to the knocker, and it glows a lot. And then it does it. I do it again, and poof, there it goes. So I'm like, ah, there's the eureka moment right there. So I get my multimeter out, and I look at all the different voltages. And on this Aero machine, every coil on that line is all running at the same voltage because it's all daisy-chained. On the plus side. And the way things work is you've got a transistor, and that's kind of like a light switch. You know, think about it when you enter a room. If you want to fire that coil, you turn the switch on, and then you turn it off after a certain amount of time. So that's all programmed into the machine. So you want the light to go on and then off. Like if it's a slingshot, you want it to go on-off, right? You don't want the slingshot to be held out, because then it can't do it again if the ball happens to hit off the other slingshot, and, you know, when it bounces back and forth. And so anyways, so everything's hot. Like, all the coils are getting power. So you just have to touch the lug with your multimeter and then ground it out. Like, I was grounding out to the rail right above the glass, because everything is grounded, and you should have a 3-prong plug on all your machines, and you should have a ground braid that runs throughout your machine, so like every exposed metal part has a source of ground. So the rails on your machine are a source of ground. So testing the negative onto the rail and the positive onto either one of the lugs, I was getting 43 volts on everything, because that's what those coils run at. On the knocker, however, I was getting 55 volts. And on the other side, I think it was on the ground, I was touching both sides. The hot side, it got 55. No, on the ground side, it was getting 55. So somewhere, it's picking up an extra 12 volts somehow. Like I said, I don't understand a ton about electric theory, but is there a 12-volt line on that machine somewhere? Like, a lot of mods and lighting run off of 12 volts, so a lot of current games have a 12-volt auxiliary plug on them, on the board somewhere, so that you can hook up a harness for it. I have no idea on that machine. And the scanned-in schematic, or the entire manual, actually, is fairly fuzzy. But the schematic, since everything is so tiny on it, you have to zoom in order to read it. And on that manual, when you zoom it in, you can't read anything. So somebody said, hey, check out the Bally Strange Science manual. It's a lot clearer, and that is a fairly generic system. You know, your trough and your slingshots and your knocker and stuff like that. That probably ran game to game. That is not game specific. So I checked it out, and I don't know that I've seen... I looked at the manual a little bit, and I don't think I've seen anywhere that shows 12 volts, but I didn't pay super close attention, because what I did is I desoldered the ground side and put electrical tape over that line just because. And you know what I should do? I should check to see if there's 12 volts on that line with it unhooked from the rest of the daisy chain. I'll do that right afterwards. So anyways, did that, and my slow blow fuse supply came in, and so I put a new fuse in there, and I played it for like an hour the other day. So I think that one's off the project list. The knocker doesn't work, but on the thread I started, I actually had a guy come in and said, yeah, me and a friend I know both have these machines, and same thing happened where the knocker started blowing that 1-amp fuse. And so we just desoldered it, and now we just play without... Because you don't need the knocker. It's just an ego thing for some people, but it's a, you know, it's the audible way of knowing, hey, you got a free game out of that. So, you know, when you got people standing around, you have that thing going off, that's the coolest sound in pinball. So anyways, I have two other projects, and I don't think I have to make those stories nearly as long. One of them I don't, because I just got it, so I don't have a whole lot of a story on that. So anyways, that was a couple month project. That really wasn't, I could have probably done that in a week if I was like super gung-ho, but I was kind of getting familiar with the game because that was the first Bally Midway board set. You know, it's a 6803 is what they call it. That's the generation. Like, you've got System 11 with Williams stuff. You've got, System 9, 7, whatever. The 6803 is a board set type for Bally, so Bally Midway. Anyways, my second project that is truly a project is a 1969 Bally Joust that I got off of Craigslist for so much less money than I've put into it so far, which is kind of the way these things go with the labor of love. It kind of, it's just the way it is. So anyways, I bought this machine for $120. It's a 1969 two-player EM. It is a 2-inch flipper game, but it has zipper flippers, which means that the flipper gap, when you hit certain things, there's a coil in there, and there's a mechanical assembly that is on it. Both flippers are, like, they're not screwed into the playfield. They're screwed into this plate, and it has a pivoting assembly in there. And when you hit whatever target it is, it closes the gap on the flipper, and you literally cannot drain the ball unless you've got one flipper up and it rolls in. If you have these zipper flippers closed, the ball will come to rest in the center, at the center tips of those flippers, and then you can either hit both buttons at the same time to shoot it straight up, or you can offset, like left-right, and your left one will fire just before, and so that will roll it up on the right flipper a little bit so that it will shoot off at an angle. So you can do that, you know, obviously either side. And Keith Elwin has a video, I think it's on a firepower, an EM firepower. And he's demonstrating how you actually aim with zipper flippers closed. And it's so cool. Like, it's fun. And so I played a couple games on that thing. When I got it, the score reels, there was two reels on player one that weren't resetting. So when you start a game, all you'd hear was, like, the of the score motor. Like, because in the cabinet, there's this giant motor assembly. And until everything is at the reset state, the game won't start. So big shout out to the EM Dungeon on the Spooky Pinball Podcast, Mr. James Willing, I believe is his name. And he goes through and he, like, very, very detailed on various aspects of older machines. And he's really good at kind of explaining stuff. It's a little bit of a dry presentation, but it's very intentional. If you listen to the Spooky Pinball Podcast, you know that's for a reason, and you know that's just the way it is. And anyways, I learned a lot about the whole reset cycle thing from his segment on the Spooky Pinball Podcast. So big shout out to those guys. Spooky's awesome. So anyways, the game won't start until everything's reset. And so it would sit there and just go and click over and over and over again, and I looked up, and, like, one of the score reels was showing a 2, the other one was showing an 8, and I kind of understood the system at that point when I got it. After I took the game apart, that's when I learned a lot more. So I went in the back, and I manually, you know, clicked the things to 0, the reels to 0, and then the game would start. And so I was able to play games on that thing. I only played a couple of games until I was like, hey, let's fix this thing. And the biggest problem with that game was physical. So, and cosmetic, I guess, is the more specific category. So the cabinet, I think this game had been left outside at some point, because the cabinet, all the paint on one side was kind of do like the chip peeling type thing, and it almost looked like planking, but it kind of was, but it wasn't really, like, it was chipping off. You could run a strip of masking tape on it and then peel it up, and then you would bring up about 25% of the paint that was making contact with that tape. So that was nasty. And on one side, it was really bad. On the other side, it had actually already mostly fallen off. So that was going to be definitely a repaint project. The play field, the paint wasn't doing the same thing. It was actually, like, turning into a powder in some areas. You could kind of swipe across it, and you would not pull up dust. Because dust has, like, that grayish color to it, right? No, you could pull up, like, aqua or white, or it was more of, like, the strawberry runts. Like, that was the color of the red. I don't know exactly how deep of a red that is, but my machine, it looks like the strawberry runt color, right? And, so anyways, it's like, okay, so I have no idea the best way to make this happen. So let me tell you what I should have done on this machine. This was definitely a project from day one. I knew it going into it, and it's been in my garage for 4 years. So yeah, it's turned into a very long project. And that's because at first I was like, hey, let's just do paint touch-ups, and then we'll clear coat it, and then the playfield will be done. So I stripped it all, started doing, like, masking tape at the edges, and kind of how you do, like, you see people do, like, pinstriping and stuff, or how you paint your baseboards at your house. So I started doing that, and I was getting okay results on the edges and then other areas. Like, I don't know. At some point, I just hated it. So I was like, all right, well, let's... I was painting with a toothpick in the beginning, and then that was before I was doing the paint, or the tape, I think. So then I started doing the tape and a brush. It's like, and then I was doing, like, tape and an airbrush, and then Friskit and an airbrush, which Friskit is, like, if you have ever had, like, a sleeve in a three-ring binder that you put a sheet of paper in, like, Friskit is kind of like that, but has except it's just a single sheet, and it's got a little bit of a tacky stick to it on one side. So it's supposed to be removable and without pulling things up. So anyways, I was doing that, and I really suck at doing art. Can I just say, I mean, like, it was atrocious. So I know mechanical design, right? So I was doing, I know AutoCAD and a couple different 3D modelers and stuff like that. So what I ended up doing, try not to make this take forever, what I ended up doing was I took my playfield, I took it to a print shop in-house, and they scanned it, and I put that into AutoCAD, and I basically did the, hey, let's paint with colors type of thing. I traced everything that with color or black border, key lining, you know, that it needs to, and then I assigned all the colors to it, and I hatched everything, which is just like making a solid fill, like if you've got a circle, instead of trying to draw lines enough to fill that in or whatever, you just draw a circle at the border, you say hatch, and then you click in there and say solid, and then you have to change colors or whatever, but it'll basically fill that in for you. So I did that with this entire playfield, and I probably wasted a good 20 to 30 hours trying to paint this thing. I've probably got another 20 hours in the AutoCAD of this thing, but it looks so much better, and so that's where I'm at with that right now. I also did the same thing with the cabinet, the three sides of the cabinet, because the front had some art, the side had some art, and then the head, the back of the cabinet's just all white. The head also has this cool, like, horse up on its back legs. I know there's a term for that. I can't remember what it is. And there's also a shield on it, and on the side there's, like, a castle outline with a lance and a shield, and, I mean, this whole thing is, it's cool. And so that art is all done. I'm trying to get that same print house to print this on vinyl for me, but I guess my PDF is, like, crashing their computer they use for this, and so they were just like, you know, we unfortunately can't do this right now unless it's in an Adobe Illustrator format. So, whatever, that's bad news, but I've got other leads, so that's where I'm at with that side of the project. I also sanded the entire cabinet down and painted that all with a white primer and then an actual white paint. So that's sitting right there in my garage. It's up on legs. I put the legs back on with those metal cabinet protectors. I screwed those in first. I was just like, ugh. You know, this cabinet was made in 1969, and I was just, like, drilling into it and screwing these plates in. I'm like, oh, I hope the pinball gods don't, like, strike me with lightning or lightning flippers or something for doing this. But then I put the legs back on, and when I put the decals on for the cabinet, the legs will not sit right on the decals, so they won't crease. And that's the whole thing that I was avoiding, trying to avoid with that. So, because I want this to be nice. It's not going to be perfect because I'm doing it, but I want it to look as nice as I can make it look. The play field, I also sanded down completely to the wood, and I tried staining it to get rid of some of the sun staining, there were sun bleaching that's on there, because you can tell where there used to not be paint. Where it used to be bare wood and was always that way, there's an outline, like where the flippers are. There's an outline of that. And so I tried staining that to hide that a little bit. It blended in a little bit, but, I mean, you'd have to go really dark of a stain in order to make that all blend in. So, and I wasn't really prepared to do that. So hopefully when I put the playfield overlay, the decal down, hopefully it's not going to be noticeable. We'll see. So for the playfield, in preparation of that, though, I have learned how to clear coat, which I tried the brush method, which was a thread on a forum that I saw, and I was just like, you know, hey, that's easier. It's a little more, it's not as pretty. Like, it takes a couple more times, and you have to sand it a little bit more because brush strokes with a foam brush are not as nice as shooting it with a spray gun. And so I did that once. No, I did after the second coat. I was like, you know what? I'm not really liking this. So I sanded it back down to the wood again. Stain is still there. And I got myself a gun, and I hooked it up to the compressor. I've got a nice 33-gallon compressor, so I wasn't going to run short of air or anything. And then I just sprayed it. And, you know, the first time I ran the hopper dry, and I learned that when you do that, You need to leave a little in there, because if you do that, if you don't, and you let it run completely empty, your last little bit's going to kind of spit out, and it'll make bubbles. And so I had bubbles on the playfield for the first pass, and everything on this is practice, and it really doesn't matter, because I'm going to cover it with the sticker anyways. So, but I sanded that down after it had dried, and then my second coat, I made sure to not do as many passes, light passes each time, and I didn't run it completely empty, and so many fewer bubbles. There's like 3 bubbles that I've noticed on this thing, and they're super tiny. They're like pinhead size. So if I sand those, I hopefully on the third try, I'll get 0, and if I don't get 0, I don't know what to do. We'll see how it goes. So anyways, once I get all those decals printed, I'm basically ready to slap them on the cabinet in the head, and then just finish. I can, you know, sand and prep the playfield, put the sticker down, clear coat that thing again, and then start putting stuff back on, and that will finally be ready to play. I'm so excited to play this game. I haven't played it in 4.5 years. It's 4.5 years now. Wow. And it's a fun game. Like, it's very simple because it's an EM, but it's a fun game. Check it out. Just Google Bally 1969 Joust, and the database will show up, and it'll take you right to the database page. It's got a little bagatelle feature. You're trying to shoot 1 through 9, and that'll get you some sort of a bonus. And every number is represented on the playfield with a target, except for 1, which I thought was kind of weird, unless I just haven't noticed. I think it's the number 4. But on the bagatelle, obviously, it's got everything because it's a 9x9, and you only need to light all 9 features, or arrows, or indicators, or whatever you want to call them. So, very simplistic game, but it's a lot of fun to shoot, and those 2-inch flippers make it a lot of fun. There's no in-lanes, the slingshots are right above the flippers, and the out-lanes are just, they might as well be magnetic, because a lot of the slingshots are angled to the point where various different features will feed the ball to the slingshot, which will kick it right into the out lane. So, very much an EM machine. So, but that one's a ton of fun. my last project that I just got a couple weeks ago, which I have kind of worked on, I've play tested to know that some switches aren't working, but most of the game is. Sorry. It's a high speed, and the cabinet, it's basically Joust Part 2. The cabinet and the playfield will both need to be sanded down, painted, and decals applied. There's also switch issues, like the upper flipper, how it shoots up to that ramp. At first, neither one of those switches were working, and I think one of those is now working, because the diverter started working, I think. But the second diverter is not. And the sound has, like, some static in there, so something's wrong there. I have the awesome music. I have some of the scoring sound effects, as far as I know. But I don't have any of the audio call-outs, from what I'm remembering. Like, the police officer side of the audio call-outs, that's not there. So there's going to be some sound investigation that goes on as well. The back panel of the head is like this super thin, really crappy plywood, and it was actually nailed in with brad nails or finishing nails. and in order to close the head, like, they had to be forced shut. It had to be forced closed, and those nails ripped out. And that's when I first got it home, I was opening the head, and I was like, why is this not, like, wanting to stand upright? It was, like, a 10-degree angle off from you know, standing straight up. And I looked in the back, and I was like, oh, this flap is over, and there's nails back there. Oh, I bet that's how they used to hold it up. And so, that was the first part. As I pulled those nails out, and I hacked the lower edge of that off so I could lift the head up. And fortunately, the lock on the glass was not shut, so I was able to lift the glass out, and the 2 head bolts were in the head, and so it was able to stay upright. It's super wobbly because there's no support from that back piece, so that'll be something that I have to take care of as well. But I was able to play it, And there's one transistor on the board that was split into three pieces, each leg holding like a piece of the plastic body. That was kind of funny. I replaced that, and not knowing exactly what had caused it. Looked for switch closures, nothing was there. So I replaced it, and 2 games into it, my mom was over. I was like, hey, check out this new project I got, because, you know, my family is interested in projects. And so after, like, 2 games we were playing, and all of a sudden I smelled smoke, and I was just like, oh, crap, turn it off real quick. And I lifted the playfield, and I actually smelled in the head first. Didn't smell anything. Lifted the playfield. That's where the smell was coming from, and I started, like, you know how you kind of, like, lightly tap the coils to see which one's hot? And everything was fine until it was one of these, the pop bumper coils, and I was like, oh, I know it's going to be this one. I touched it, I was like, oh, wow, that's hot. And sure enough, that's the coil that relates to that transistor. So there's something else wrong there. I have a couple leads. I just haven't done anything recently on that because after that transistor was, and the transistor was dead. I checked it again, and instead of passing voltage freely, it's not passing anything. So the coil will not lock on when you turn the machine on. So you can sit there and play it, and the pop bumper won't work because the transistor's dead, but not dead sending current through. So I was playing it for a little bit, and I hadn't investigated further because all of a sudden the right flipper was just kind of like, meh, just kind of mush, right? And I look on, and I heard something drop, and I was like, oh, sweet, what broke now? So I look in there, and that yoke, that 2 pivot point yoke, had shattered. I was like, oh, man. So ordered some flipper rebuild kits, and that's where we're at with that one. So that'll be a fun one. I love High Speed. High Speed is just such a great game. You know, it's very simplistic by modern standards, but there's actually a fair amount to it. I didn't know there was a 3-ball multi-ball. I only have ever done the 2-ball. And then I'm sitting there at Pinburg watching, and it was probably Josh Sharp had started it, and I'm like, wait, there's 3 balls on the playfield. How do you do that? Because I don't know. So, I mean, there's even as aged, as well-aged as that machine is, there's still something on there that I don't know how to do. And I'm not sure if I want you guys to spoil it yet. So don't send me messages saying, oh, well, you just hit this, then it'll let you lock a 3rd ball. Don't do that. So, anyways, yeah. So the dirtiest word in pinball is projects. And as long as you can just kind of get out there and tinker on them a little bit, you know, maybe not every day, but just make some progress, slow and steady, it'll be more like Special Force and a little bit less like Joust, even though I learned a ton of stuff on Joust, because it's the first time I was doing a lot of stuff pinball-wise. You know, like, I'd never done the painting, I'd never done the touch-ups, I tried doing touch-ups and I suck at color matching. I am not meant for art. I am meant for mechanical design. And so that's the path I took. And, yeah, so I'm super pumped. All I need is to get these things printed out, and we can get going on this game, and I might actually be playing it before the end of this year, which that would be super awesome, and my wife will be shocked, because she doesn't think it will ever get finished. So, go Team Pinball. So that's kind of it. Yeah, so I'm really also bad at doing outro stuff, so, because I didn't even mention on the last episode anything. So check us out, TucsonPinball.com, on Facebook, Tucson Pinball. We're the one that you can get likes, not friends, which is kind of weird, because there is a Tucson Pinball that you can ask to be a friend. They have a picture of the Earthshaker backglass as their profile picture, and they have like 4 friends, and they've been on there longer than I've been on Facebook, I think. So yeah, it's not that one. It's the one with, as of right now, the really cool Sugar Skull logo and that Double Danger Pinball did for us. Check them out. They make stuff. They make shirts. And hey, guess what? We have shirts too. So if you like that logo and think it's awesome, you can get a shirt with that logo. And I have lady sizes, small, medium, and large, and I have men's sizes, medium, large, extra large, and I completely forgot that I have a handful of 2XLs. And so anyways, if you want any of those, send me a message on Facebook or Wayne@TucsonPinball.com. And yeah, and I can get those shipped out to you. The shirts are $20 if you come find me in person. I actually didn't know that the post office had raised their rates on flat rate stuff. I used to ship those small, like, VHS-sized and shaped flat rate boxes for, what was it, $5.85? And I think it was, like, $5.15 discounted if you did an online thing. That's now, like, $6.45 or something like that. So shirts, unfortunately, are going to be 27 shipped unless I find a padded envelope that fits them nicely. And maybe we'll adjust the shipping, but anyways, let's just kind of go with that. If you want a shirt, hit me up. You can have any color as long as it's red. And yeah, that's it. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time. Later.
Party on, Wayne. Party on, Garth. It's Wayne's World. Wayne's World. Party time. Excellent. And we're clear.